Gene Pasale, and this is Living History. This show explores the rich heritage of the Brandywine Valley outside Philadelphia, focusing on the people, places, and events over more than 300 years which have played an important part in our American heritage. Each show highlights a local town, event, or personality who's had a notable influence on our culture. And before we get started, I want to mention that our call-in line, if you have questions or comments, is 610-701-9243. That's 610-701-9243. This day in history, April 19th. On this day in 1775, shots are fired on Lexington Green in Massachusetts, an event considered by historians as the beginning of the American Revolutionary War. Colonists faced off against British troops, who later marched to the nearby town of Concord, where more bloodshed occurred, enraging local citizens who called for more aggressive action against England. In 1861, just a week after the fall of federal Fort Sumter in South Carolina, the first deaths involving shooting directly between Union troops and Southern secessionists occurred as an angry mob attacked soldiers from the 6th Massachusetts Regiment who were marching in Baltimore, a hotbed of Southern opposition to the newly elected administration of Abraham Lincoln. 4 soldiers died, along with 12 citizens. In 1897, the first Boston Marathon was held, with 15 people officially entered into the race. Only 10 finished the endurance contest, but it became a well-followed sports event. Over the decades, many major American cities, including New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, and others, held their own marathons, attracting tens of thousands of running enthusiasts. And in 1964, Mario Andretti completes his first Indianapolis 500, placing 11th. The next year, he won the first of 4 Indy championships in what would become a storied career in car racing. There's something very special about holding a hardcover, leather-bound classic in your hands, reading in peace. Bookstores are warehouses of information, places where people can browse thousands of titles, read, and relax as they enjoy tales of fascinating events in places around the world. With a book, you can travel to locations you only dreamed of, in the comfort of your home. Sadly, many bookstores are facing huge challenges these days, with the ubiquitous internet and e-publishing bringing reading material electronically to people at the touch of a button. With the loss of Borders a few years back, many people wondered which bookstore chain might be next. Independent booksellers remain the backbone of the industry today, with thousands of single-store bookshops remaining open to serve their loyal customers. One of those is Macaluso's Rare Books in Kennett Square, Pennsylvania. It offers thousands of first editions and rare volumes not widely available to the public. Tom Macaluso is an experienced hand in the book business. He's operated his store for over 40 years and has a wealth of knowledge about the industry, rare books, the many first editions he's owned, a wide range of classics, and even the bookmaking process. He's seen many changes over the decades and competes successfully using the internet to serve his many customers. Tom is here with us today to tell us about his shop, the state of the industry, his love for books, and his outlook for the years ahead. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Gene. Glad to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you. Tom, you have an advanced degree, I believe, in English. Tell us a little bit about your academic background. Where did you go to school? What was your training?
Well, it's pretty complicated. My bachelor's and master's degrees are in English, but I also attended Fordham and Georgetown law schools and acquired quite a few credits in the law. And as a matter of fact, I was a law editor for Prentice Hall and for the Metropolitan Life Insurance Company. I finally went back to graduate school at New York University and completed most of my doctoral studies there, and they were in English and American literature. I also took a few courses at Temple on higher education administration because I went into college work and for a time was a dean.
Now, you were a professor at a couple of different colleges. Tell us a little bit about your work there.
Well, I started teaching as a professor of English and of law at Monmouth University in New Jersey, and then we taught at Ohio State, and we came to this area as a department chair and then dean, and then returned to the faculty at Delaware County Community College. Altogether, I think I was in higher education for, 35 years or so.
Very long time.
Yes.
Tell us about your getting into the retail book business. When did that start, and when did you open your first store in Kennett Square?
Well, I was employed at Delaware County Community College, and my wife and I decided to go into the bookselling business. I had been collecting books since I was 14 years old and had thousands of books. And so we opened a shop and then purchased our present location. And so we've been buying and selling books, books of choice, books of lasting interest, hardbacks only, and virtually every subject. And we've been selling through the Internet as well. We've had customers in 46 countries and all 50 states.
Unbelievable. Now, for a small bookstore, that sounds like a huge range of offerings and a wide range of customers. I know you showcase many rare books and manuscripts as well as prints and other items. Tell us about the range of your offerings there at Macaluso's Rare Books.
Well, we have books on virtually all subjects, from hunting and fishing, medicine and science, travel, exploration, religion, philosophy, all the arts, architecture, fiction, poetry, drama, theater, children's books, books illustrated by famous artists like N.C. Wyeth, books on virtually every subject, but we try very hard to buy just those books that are of lasting interest, whether they were published 30 years ago or 300 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've been to your store many times, and by the way, it's a wonderful bookstore. If any of our listeners haven't been to Kennett Square, the next time you get to town, stop in Macaluso's Rare Books. It is a great place to buy some really special volumes. I know that you've had some extremely rare books. I think you had a copy of Homer? The Iliad or the Odyssey? Did you have one of those?
Well, I do have an edition of the Odyssey just now, and it's a limited edition. I think there were 550 copies printed, illustrated by N.C. Wyeth and signed by him, beautifully bound. Mm-hmm. The binding is much different from what we call the trade edition, the one that was available in the bookstores.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just one. We've had first editions of books by Mark Twain and Charles Dickens, and we've had first editions of Darwin's, including The Origin of Species, first editions of Jane Austen, and numerous notable works of lasting interest.
Now, you mentioned the Internet. How much do you use that in your business? I'm assuming it's grown somewhat over the years, and how is it? Has it affected your business?
Well, on the low end, it's not had a good effect. There are a lot more people selling books online than have bookstores. Many of them are students or retirees, and they put books that they've purchased for a dollar or two at garage sales online for $3 or $4 plus shipping. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they are books that a knowledgeable person would think, oh, it ought to be worth $20 or $30 anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So on the low end, the Internet has had not had a good effect. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, for the more expensive books and scarcest, and by the way, it is scarcity, relative scarcity, that determines on the value, as well as, of course, the significance of the book. On the high end, the Internet has been helpful. I have sold, as I mentioned, books to people in 46 countries. I've had to ship them out.
Mm-hmm.
That is to say, these are customers who would never find their way to Kennett Square.
Yeah, and I assume that includes Europe, Asia, all over the globe.
Yes, all over. Most of my internet sales have been to the United States, Canada, Great Britain, Australia, but a lot of books have been sent to China and Japan. Obviously, the vast majority of books I sell are in the English language.
Sure.
And English is becoming a universal tongue to some extent.
That is excellent. I'm sure over the years you've held in your hands some extremely rare items. Tell our listeners about some of the more interesting ones that you've acquired.
Well, I've had a first edition of The Origin of Species. I mentioned that a minute ago. I've had a first edition of Mark Twain's Tom Sawyer, another of his Huckleberry Finn.
That must have been special.
Oh, yes. And, of course, condition is very important. Our books are in very good condition.
Mm-hmm.
Countless. We've sold many copies of first editions by Ernest Hemingway, for mm-hmm. instance.
One of my favorites.
Yes, and one of mine as well. Mm. And some of these books, by the way, have been limited editions, specially printed, and quite a few have been signed by the author, which really enhances the value, but as well as the interest that a book has. I have had quite a few books signed by T.S. Eliot, Ernest Hemingway, and many others.
Interesting. We're just about to take a brief break, but real quickly, what is the most valuable or highest priced book you've come across that you later resold? Can you recall?
Well, I think it's probably the first edition of Mark Twain's Huckleberry Finn, because during the first printing, there were many errors discovered one at a time, and the presses were stopped to correct the errors. Mm. I had a copy with all the errors in them.
Interesting.
In it. And that means, of course, it was one of the first printed.
Yeah.
And the collector really enjoys having the earliest copy.
That's a special connection with the author, and having an original Mark Twain in your hands is something that I would treasure, too. I think I have a few collections of Mark Twain, but they're much later, certainly well into the 20th century. We're about to take a brief break for commercials, but please stay with us. We're talking with Tom Macaluso of Macaluso's Rare Books in Kennett Square, PA.
Do you have a wedding, graduation, baptism, confirmation, milestone, or birthday to plan? You need John Surratt Catering, one of the most highly rated and preferred caterers throughout the Philadelphia area. They will be there to create and cater your event while assisting as much or as little as you desire. Planning a decadent, over-the-top company gala? Need help transforming your backyard into the party of the year? Want to wow your clients with a delicious luncheon? Then you need John Surratt Catering. All you have to do is call, and they'll handle the rest. Located at 835 Lincoln Avenue in Westchester, visit them at SurrockCatering.com or call 610-640-2836. That's 610-640-2836.
If you had to choose a roofer, would you choose one with limited experience and knowledge, or would you choose a roofer certified as a master elite contractor by the largest manufacturer in the nation, GAF, a distinction shared by only 3% of the nation's roofers? I'm talking about GP Martini Roofing, who also does siding, windows, doors, and offers an ironclad guarantee that he'll repair or replace any roof for defects within its normal life. GP Martini Services, Chester, Delaware, Bucks, and Montgomery counties, with free estimates and consultation, and does both commercial and residential. Go to their website at martiniroofing.com for special savings, or call 610-873-1696. And also, financing is available with no payments for a full year. Now, what roofer would you call? GP Martini is the answer. 610-873-1696.
If it's happening in Chester County, you'll hear about it here. WCAG 1520 AM, the talk of Chester County.
Eugene Pasale, and this is Living History. Today we're speaking with Tom Macaluso of Macaluso's Rare Books in Kennett Square, Pennsylvania. Tom, have you met any famous authors over the years?
You know, I can't say that I have. I wish I could say that I had. No, I'm afraid not.
Well, I know some bookstores pride themselves on having famous authors occasionally show up, I don't know if they're patrons or just wanted to stop by and browse the inventory. Well, talk about famous authors. How about some of your favorite famous books? Tell us about some of the styles and the different novels and different types of books that you personally prefer.
Well, my background, of course, in literature and my love for literature ever since I was a child has pretty much mandated that my favorites are, in fact, in fiction and in poetry and in drama. Probably Thomas Wolfe, who wrote several novels back in the 1930s and 40s. The first, I think, and most notable was Look Homeward, Angel.
Mm-hmm. Well-known book.
Then he wrote You Can't Go Home Again, mm-hmm. and several others. And when people ask what my favorites are, I always mention them. On the other hand, of course, T.S. Eliot and Ernest Hemingway are favorites of mine as well. My interest in other areas has grown, and my knowledge, of course, has also grown, because, of course, my customers are physicians and attorneys and business people, and mm-hmm. their interests and their favorites vary, mm-hmm. and I've learned a great deal from them. And mm-hmm. we share a lot. As a matter of fact, I really enjoy customers coming in and chatting with me about books and about literature.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure you learn a lot just from just talking with your customers who may have a pretty wide range of experience with books themselves. Any favorite Dickens?
David Copperfield.
Oh, that's a classic, yeah. How about Shakespeare?
Well, I taught Shakespeare.
Literally, you knew him.
No.
Wait a minute, you don't go back that far.
Okay. No, I don't.
Yeah.
No, I taught.
I thought I may have a signed first edition there from him personally.
I taught Shakespeare courses. I don't know what my favorite is. I've got too many, I think.
Okay, I'm going to turn completely around. How about Arthur Conan Doyle? Any famous kind of whodunits there?
I do have some Doyle from time to time, and in fact, of course, I do buy and sell mysteries, suspense books, mm-hmm. you know, some science fiction.
Interesting.
I can't say that I have a favorite, mm-hmm. and actually I haven't read a whole lot in those genres.
Mm-hmm. I just got back from a one-week Smithsonian tour of Cuba, and the spark for going there was the tour highlighted that their first stop was Hemingway's home, what they call the Finca Vigia, which is technically translated as the lookout farm outside of Havana. As you mentioned, Hemingway remains a favorite of many readers. I was there to see several of his watering holes and famous sites, and we were lucky to stop in about five different ones, which was just wonderful. Tell us your feelings about Hemingway, and then maybe even compare him with some of his contemporaries like John Steinbeck.
Well, by the way, I was stationed in the Navy for 3 months or so in Key West, and I had hopes of running into him. This was back in the 1950s, mm-hmm. And I never did. Mm-hmm. Hemingway's The Old Man and the Sea, you know.
A classic.
A classic.
I was in Cohamar, the little fishing village which inspired the novella, and there's a little restaurant called La Terraza, which is actually mentioned in the book. We actually ate there right next to his table. Mm. Hemingway is often compared with John Steinbeck, one of the towers of American literature. What do you think about Steinbeck?
Well, by the way, to answer your first question, I think the two are very, very different from one another.
Yeah.
They're, the depth and the style vary quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Steinbeck's works, I think, are much, much more intellectually provocative.
Yes. I would agree.
Hemingway's tend to be adventuresome.
Mm-hmm.
So they're very different from one another.
Very different styles. Yeah, both won the Pulitzer, I believe. Either the Pulitzer. I know that Hemingway won both the Pulitzer and the Nobel.
Mm-hmm.
I believe Steinbeck also won either a Pulitzer or the Nobel. I'm not sure.
I can't recall, but you're right. One or the other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love Steinbeck as well, and you're right. The styles are quite different. Steinbeck, very detailed writer, detailed descriptions of scenery and families and history, etc. Any thoughts on a guy named Philip Roth?
No, I haven't read much by him, and he's recently deceased, but fairly recently.
Mm-hmm. Portnoy's Complaint, I think he
was. Yeah, I recall reading that, yes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Any other American writers that have caught your attention over the years?
Well, my own prejudice is, or primary interest, let's say, in at this point in my life, has been in theology.
Mm.
So I haven't read much in the way of fiction for quite a while.
Mm-hmm. In terms of your personal work, I know that you have actually done repair work on books and have studied the paper-making process, so you understand books in ways that most people have very little knowledge of. Tell us a little bit about your background in learning about actually how to make and bind books.
Well, I don't do it professionally, but I have always valued the physical object. And they don't make books nowadays, not very many anyway, the way they used to.
Mm-hmm.
So I did study paper making. I studied decorating paper.
Mm-hmm.
I studied folding paper and sewing it and making the boards and putting a book together.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted the experience of having done that.
Mm-hmm.
A great many of our books, particularly in the rare book room, by the way, we have five rooms, one of which is filled with the most expensive and scarcest books.
Mm-hmm.
A great many of them are leather-bound and gilt-edged and beautifully manufactured.
I can attest to that. I've seen hundreds of them there.
Yeah.
And they are very special and very different from the typical book today.
Yes, indeed. And I have studied it. The University of the Arts in Philadelphia offered a couple of non-credit courses at the Delaware Art Museum quite a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I took those two courses, and they were laboratory courses. That is to say, all of the students actually made paper.
Mm.
And put a book together from
mm-hmm.
scratch.
Interesting.
And it was a very good experience.
I bet it was. Now, you have personally held tens of thousands of books in your hands and also seen many autographs. Privately, you told me about an incident where you thought something was a forgery at one point, I think many years back. Tell us about how you can recognize an authentic autograph and what appear to be forgeries to you, having seen many of them.
Well, first of all, I do have a couple of references on autograph collecting, and some of them contain sample signatures of prominent people. And so there is a resource to which one can refer.
Mm-hmm.
When I see a book that is inscribed or signed by the author or by someone of note, I hope that it is more than the name itself.
Mm.
Instead, it may be a greeting that indicates the place and time and
mm-hmm.
the person to whom it's being inscribed.
Mm-hmm.
All of that helps determine the authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's certainly more likely to be authentic
mm-hmm.
than a simple signature.
Sure.
And then the other thing is comparing signatures of a single person.
Mm-hmm.
If they are too much alike, if in fact they are exactly like one another,
mm-hmm.
it's probably not a real signature. Instead, it is a photocopy or some other system.
Forgery.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think handwriting experts note that by any individual or any group of individuals, handwriting varies from day to day, week to week, month, year to year, by the same person. And if a signature appears exactly the same in every single instance, it's probably a forgery.
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah. Sadly, many people today, especially young people, prefer to watch video games or play with electronic devices instead of reading books. What's the future of the hard copy book business?
Well, you know, in a few years ago, I think a lot of us were really concerned. But lately, the sale of Kindles and other technologies has decreased. And I receive a great many visits from young people, college and high school students, who, though they have Kindles, don't enjoy them.
Mm.
And they love books.
Excellent. Well, I'm a book lover, as you well know. I've been to your shop many times. And by the way, a topic we wanted to mention here is that there are actually 4 bookstores in the small village of Kennett Square. Tell us about Kennett Square.
Well, there are 2 other bookstores on the same street as mine.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, I assisted them both in being established.
Mm-hmm.
So there are 3 bookstores in this street on this block.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a 4th one, the military bookstore, that has not only books but other military items.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a pretty remarkable for a town of this size. I think we have about 7,000 people.
I think it's exceptional.
Yeah, and it's wonderful. And when people from a distance call to ask whether they can come and visit me, I encourage them to do so, and I almost always say, and by the way, there are 2 other stores across the street from mine, so please do visit.
Which is great. And by the way, for our listeners, I can attest that Macaluso's Rare Books, in my opinion, is the best bookstore in Kennett Square, and it has many, many wonderful books, including hometown hero Bayard Taylor, who was well-known in the area. He's probably got the largest collection of Bayard Taylor and Taylor books about him and by him of any place in the region, aside from possibly the Kennett Library, but wonderful collection of books. Tom, thank you so much for being on the show today. We really enjoyed it.
Well, thank you, Gene. I enjoyed it also.
Be sure to tune in next Wednesday, April 26th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, when we'll be speaking with U.S. Geological Survey hydrogeologist Ron Slodo about the historic mines and minerals of our region. Thank you all for tuning in today to Living History.